Welcome to the On So Many Levels podcast. My name is Chris. I'm a co-owner and operator at Level 52 Studios, sculptor and a professional toy maker.
And my name's Steven. I'm also a co-owner at Level 52 Studios. I'm a software engineer by trade, but I also like to dabble in amateur model and statue painting as well as a collector.
Awesome. This podcast is going to be about collectibles, the state of the toy industry, an inside look into making collectibles, miniatures, and board games. Level 52 Studios is a statue company that we started about 5 years ago. We do OEM manufacturing and licensed products. We make statues mainly, but we're venturing into action figures as well. And recently we started a new company called Broken Anvil Miniatures, which the name implies we're going to be making miniatures and board games. You can find us on somanylevels.com. That's on somanylevels.com, level52studios.com, brokenanvilminiatures.com, at level52_studios on Instagram, and at brokenanvilminiatures on Instagram as well. All right. So in this first episode, we're going to talk about the state of the industry, mostly referring to collectibles, toys, and action figures. I think the first thing we're going to discuss is the most obvious one. It's right out there in the open. It's COVID, our favorite thing that's happening in the United States right now and across the world. It's causing a lot of delays, sales numbers dropping, shipping issues, etc.
And deaths of human people.
Yeah, well, that's a big one. I think something that needs to be talked about here is like the delays happen in statue collectibles no matter what. That's been a part of collecting since collecting's existed. Things get delayed. But with COVID, the problem is the delays are coming from so many different areas. They're coming from the factory having delays, shipping, not being able to just get your stuff. Like, we've actually had many people we've shipped stuff out to, like in France, for example, that it hit France and they immediately sent it back to the United States because they don't have the capacity to deliver, which is expensive because then someone's really got to pay expensive for that shipping, and it's usually not the customer, right? It's the company that does it. The other issue is people who are designing these things and working together, you would think could work from home for the most part, but a collaborative experience with art requires people, you know, being around each other. And with COVID, you can't do that so well. So,
yeah, I mean, especially if you're working with people or companies that haven't been working together for 10 or 15 or 20 years. Yeah. And there's still quite a bit of turnover, I think, is at least with some of the people that you're working with. And it's not like you have a symbiotic relationship. So you still, it still requires you to have some face-to-face interaction.
Yeah, it's been rough. And here at Level 52, like we were hit pretty hard in the beginning. Most of the people stayed home. As one of the co-owners, I decided to go in to keep operations going and some projects on track. But for the most part, it was a pretty rough start. And now we've kicked back in, but it's, you know, it's difficult when we're trying to maintain the standards of, you know, 6 feet from each other and always wearing PPE. We wear PPE anyways because we're working with resin and plastic and sanding and paint. But it's difficult when you have to do a meeting in full PPE and you can't hear anybody. And it's slowing everything down.
Well, I'm trying to work in a, if you only have most of your staff, you try and keep them in one area anyway so that you can work together constantly throughout the day and throughout the process and stuff. And then all of a sudden you get hit with this thing where you're like, we're not set up right out the gate to just separate everybody immediately and then move everybody who's in one or two offices now out to six offices or something like that.
That's
kind of bizarre.
The biggest challenge, I think, for us has been just like bad habits, I guess would be the best way to explain it. Like, when we're working now, we're working with miniatures, which are very small. So in order to look at details, you have to put them directly in your face. Yeah. And if someone's showing you something, you know, you end up realizing you're within like 6 inches of another person's face looking at a miniature or a detail that they're trying to adjust in the physical world. And, you know, we often catch ourselves going, oh, God, like we should back up, even though we're wearing masks. It's still one of those things where it's just better to, you know, talk about the issues and then hand over the piece and have the other person look at it. And it's just not the same anymore. Like, we've noticed a big a big issue is specifically just human to human interaction that was normal before now makes the job 10 times harder because we have to like separate ourselves, set parts down, let other people pick them up. We have everything separated in bins and it's a hassle. I mean, it's a good hassle, right? We're doing it for a good cause, but it's still, it's frustrating.
Well, and you were given almost no time. I would just say like a week from when like,
yeah,
some people were saying nothing's wrong to then, all right, we're in a full pandemic and you're like, okay, now I have to completely rewire my social instincts and habits in order to keep my business going. Yeah. And keep working
and keep people safe.
Exactly.
And that's the biggest thing is like if one person catches it, we're a small team. So one person gets it and brings it in, the whole company's down.
Yeah. And we don't know each other's underlying immune systems. And I mean, we know right. We have some people that like you have asthma and things like that, that I mean, are going to like predispose you to some possible serious complications as well.
Yeah. And, I think the biggest change for us is now everybody, when they come in, it's, you know, gloves on, masks on, and then get your temperature checked at the door. It's a strange world that we're living in. And especially in something like making toys where, you know, I often get asked like, do you love what you do? And obviously yes, because I'm a 36-year-old adult who gets to make toys for a living. But now when you come into work, it's still fun, but it's not as fun as it was before. It feels like there's a cloud of seriousness that hangs over us every single day. We're constantly worried about the state of the world. And then, you know, even before this, we were already worried about trade issues with China that were going to cause massive problems with us shipping items and stuff from China. But
well, and it's like working in a lab. I at least worked in a lab, an internal lab, for long enough that every time you have something to do, if you want to go to the bathroom, if you want to grab something to eat, if you need to take a break or you need to go grab something from another room or another lab or anything, it's a huge, you just don't want to do those things. You try and put them off or try and figure out how can I do all of these things at once, because yeah. I have to go through a protocol to leave the lab and then go through another protocol to come right back in the lab to make sure that I don't bring any contaminants in or anything like that. And now everybody's working it kind of in that environment. And it's, if you are a lab inherently, that's already built into your business model. If you're not, there's no other way to cut it other than like, it costs you time and your time is valuable. I mean, every minute you spend can be monetized.
Yeah.
And just because you own your business doesn't mean that your time is free. Like right. Every time you exactly. spend doing something is time you're taking away working on something else and getting something out the door. And that over time can be really, really expensive and prohibitive mm-hmm. to getting your products out the door.
Yep. It's like those, the life hackers that talk about like saving, you know, 10 seconds here, 30 seconds yeah. there, and all adds up. It's the same thing with business. It's like the more time you have to spend doing all these extra steps that you normally don't do is time away from the day to get projects done. And, you know, the sad thing is it's not just delivering products to our customers on like a statue by statue basis. It's also the OEM clients that we work with on, you know, we're talking like thousands and thousands of units for video game deliveries and things like that, where if that's late, that's a whole other can of beans, yeah. right? So it's just been very frustrating. Obviously, like it's worse for the people who have had COVID and have died. Like that's terrible. But the obvious effect on the world is that it's slowing everything down.
Yeah. And I mean, and we're definitely, most of us are lucky that we haven't dealt with any of the yeah. firsthand ramifications of contracting COVID-19 or anything yeah. like that. And we actually get to go to our jobs and get some work done. And
yeah, luckily that is true. Like I think in this whole thing, we maybe had a 2-week situation where there was just 2 weeks where we were down, but still, I mean, we're behind on almost yeah. every single one of our projects that we
and
have.
I think everybody is. Yeah. I don't know anybody in any industry right now
yeah.
who's not behind on whatever projects they had going on, and sometimes significantly behind, where a lot of people have just stopped working on what they were working on right now because there's yeah. just the logistics are nearly impossible.
I mean, I really congratulate companies that could swiftly change. Like Bungie is a really good example. They within the first week had like laptops and computers bought for everybody, and everybody started working from home. And during this lockdown, they've released a DLC that was very successful. It's really cool when you see companies like that able to pivot so quickly, but little companies like us, it's so hard to do that. And obviously, like, we just can't work from home.
The video game industry's done a pretty remarkable job. And I know it's like, if you're just building software, that's different. Then that's much easier, because you just have like version controls and stuff like that, that people are already working from home a lot. But kind of in the same situation we're in is, when you're working on video games, it's not as easy to work remotely, because you have so many different disciplines that go into that video game that involve art, 3D,
I can't even modeling, imagine art direction,
animation, exactly.
An entire team of, you know, character artists from home, like that would be.
And it seems stressful. Like a lot of companies have still kept their deadlines and transitioned really seamlessly. Yeah. So
it's pretty amazing.
It's kind of impressive.
That's, I think, the one silver lining to come from this is to see the ability for lots of jobs to be done from home and done well from home.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in the toy industry, that's not quite possible for everybody, but some things, you know, we have sculptors that work from home now, which is nice.
Yeah.
They just come and check in every once in a while. So I think the next biggest thing we're talking about in the state of the industry is there's been a massive influx towards mainstream properties. So if you take a gander at most of the big websites like BBTS and Sideshow, where stuff is being sold, you'll notice a trend, which is mainly Marvel, Star Wars, and DC. A lot of smaller stuff is just not getting the attention it deserves, which I don't know if that's necessarily a negative thing altogether, because it's more toys being sold and things being bought by collectors, but it's also narrowing the market to just a few.
But it's IPs. There's definitely a concerted effort to promote the things that are already the most popular.
Right.
And that kind of creates a barrier for some of these, what you would, I guess, some of these indie or underground that have like a cult following, these kind of IPs, where they do, you have to, like, when you only make a couple of thousand, some of these IPs still have millions of people who love them, or even just hundreds of thousands that love them and like to consume them. And I imagine are willing to collect some of these things, but there's really no way to kind of distribute or disseminate information that, hey, these collectibles and these things are available, because they kind of just get lost in, they get lost in the fray and amongst all of the other, like, here's X-Men in your face and Star Wars in your face, keep buying, where these are things that you don't really need them to come at you and be like, buy all this X-Men stuff. You're like, I love the X, I'm going to buy the X-Men stuff or Star Wars. But
yeah, I mean, I'm looking at my collection right now and it's nothing but X-Men. But at the same time, like, I would like to see other things in the forefront, new, interesting things. And that's, you know, something I will, you know, toot our own horn a little bit. Level 52, we do other licenses, because we, let's be real, we just can't afford a Marvel license.
Yeah.
And they won't give us one because it's, you know, we're in the States, so there's other companies that have it. But with that, you know, we try to be original and interesting with new stuff, but it's difficult because it gets drowned out by the multiple Spider-Mans and the multiple Wolverines and Batmans that come out. And all those are still just as inherently good. Like, I think they're really good statues and collectibles. It's just, it's crazy when you can open up a page and out of the 50 things on that page, 45 of them are all Batman related or all Spider-Man related. And that's so much product for such a few.
Well, characters. And even just from the collector side, we're both collectors. We know collectors. We deal with collectors. We talk to collectors. As a collector, you start getting that fatigue. I know that both of us for a while, I know myself for a fact, just stopped collecting pretty much anything that was like an A-list property.
Because we already have it.
We have it, and there's so, you were just getting flooded with it.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I don't want to buy this, which is pretty cool, for $650. And then 2 weeks from now, they're going to make 10,000 more of a slightly different pose, but the right. same character. And
like, how many Wolverines do you need on your show?
Yeah. And some people would say infinite, but I think true. Most people don't think infinite, but you just kind of get that fatigue where you're like, I'm so overwhelmed that I don't want to buy anything.
Yeah.
And I do get excited when I see like I'll say indie very loosely, but I really just mean like some of the lesser known or less popular IPs. When they get promoted and I see something and I'm like, man, that's a really cool statue. That's yeah. a great looking paint job, a great sculpt, all that stuff. And a great price often. But you don't see it very often. Or you might see it for 1 second and then you come back to that page the next day and it's gone and you can't find it because it's just buried.
Right. I mean, a good example of that would be this company called House of Gog. They've done, I think, 2 statues so far. I forget the artist. I'm looking it up right now so we can see. It's based on the art of Pascal Blanche. And they're different. They're really different. They're beautiful. I mean, I'm sure they've done really well in sales because it is such a unique and interesting thing. I've seen quite a few reviews on these statues and everything. They're beautiful. But again, even with these, like, they get buried amongst everything else.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the kind of stuff we need more of, is more artistically driven, like, new characters. Like,
well, how do you expose people to stuff like this as well?
Because I found out about these guys on Instagram.
Well, that
was the only way.
We have, I think there's a problem right now as far as in promoting some of this stuff. You kind of end up in the same situation that any industry does that's been around for a while, is with Spider-Man and Batman and X-Men and Avengers. That all that stuff's great, but you're still kind of pushing this idea that the creators, the artists, the writers that do these comic books are the best there are.
Right.
And nobody's better. But now with the internet, and you go and find, like, with Reddit and Instagram and ArtStation and places like that, you're like, man, there's a lot of really, really talented thousands. People out there. Yeah. And I mean, some of these people are just on a different level than some of those people that are so highly revered in the industry. And that's not to take anything away from them. It's just that there are a lot of really, really good artists and creators out there that, really, they deserve the kind of exposure, but the finding that platform is actually really tough, because art's not really something you can, art and creativity, I just don't think, are something you can market like you can clothing or toys or cars or something like that, where you can just, right. you go to Instagram and then you can get advertisers and stuff like that. You get enough people that are influencers. You're not going to get, for lack of a better example, you're not going to get Kylie Jenner to give you a shout out for this right. really great painting or this great universe that you created.
I mean, for the right amount of money, she probably
would. And that's the thing, if you could, but then you're in like
grand or something.
Yeah. You're like, well, I don't already have that money, but how do I expose yeah. people to this? Because there's a strange phenomena that is, everybody loves art,
right?
Everybody likes things that appeal to them that are creative and cool. And I mean, it's why we like music and stuff like that. It's why a painting can sell for $250 million.
Yeah.
And sculptures and stuff like that. People love this stuff. It's just, there's not enough exposure, I think, for the people that are just unbelievably talented.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that, we, I think, do a pretty good job of trying to find and also help those people out. Like, man, this is cool and you deserve to have your stuff shown.
Yeah. Like we did that hound bust with Kurt Papstein. He's a sculptor friend of ours. That was one of the best selling things we've had. Like, it's sold super fast and it's just a giant werewolf head.
Yeah. And
it's beautiful.
It doesn't, you didn't need a license or an IP no. to do it. It's just, it's yeah. awesome. It's awesome because Kurt's a great sculptor.
Yeah.
And the prototype turned out amazing, and we got great feedback on it from everybody that saw it. But it wasn't, we didn't have to put a huge, IP on it. Like, we didn't have to slap.
It wasn't Batman's werewolf.
it's not Batman werewolf where you're going, is that, where's the Batman in that werewolf? That doesn't matter. It's just called Werewolf Batman.
Right.
And so people, it can go in your Batman collection.
People would buy the crap out of that just to say. I think the next big thing to talk about too in the state of the industry is cost trends. It's been pretty insane to see the costs go up as much as they have for things that, like, when you're part of this industry, being, you know, a collectibles company and making these products, like, we know what goes into this stuff, and we work with one of the best factories out there that they charge a lot of money. It's not cheap, but we know that, like, some of these prices are just, they're just insane. But a lot of that too comes from, like, you know, let's talk back about House of Gog. Like, that's not a cheap price for a 1/6 scale statue. It's $780, but they're doing that because it's highly limited and it's based off some very beautiful artwork. But at the same time, like, I think they're kind of forced to, because they know that they're not going to sell, you know, 4,500 units. So they have to make their money back. They have, I mean, they have to operate a business. Yeah. So
that, I mean, naturally your cost per unit has to go down.
But it makes sense for that. But when you're making a Spider-Man and you're selling 6,000 units of it, there's no reason that that shouldn't be significantly cheaper than what it is.
And I understand if you paid $2 million up front for that license, which, I mean, I don't think was the case, at least we know right now, as far as some of the statues is being made, was not that here's $2 million for the Spider-Man license. Right. Now I've got to go make my money back. Now, if you had to buy that Spider-Man license now, that might be a different story. But I don't think that's how those were acquired in the first place.
I think it was much cheaper. But even if it was expensive, I mean, it's still, you're making so many units and so many people are buying it. And there's, you know, it's just, it's crazy. I mean, we talked about it earlier off podcast. We were having a discussion about the Hasbro Transformer, or not Transformer, sorry, the Sentinel that just came out on their new, what's it, Hasbro Pulse, I believe. It's like their own Kickstarter platform. That thing is crazy expensive. It's just an articulated action figure that's 26 inches tall, and it's $350.
Yeah, so we put that into perspective. Some of the most sought after statues in history right now, as far as in the pop culture genre, are statues that maybe like 10, 15 years ago, they sold for $250. These were 1/6 to 1/4 scale statues that sold for $250. $350 was a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of my favorite statues was the Sideshow Hulk versus Spidey. I think that was about $300, maybe $350 tops. And that's a good size diorama.
Yeah. It's a lot of stuff there.
It's got light up features too, which wasn't that common for when it came out. Cause it's pretty old relative to kind of where Sideshow stuff is at now. You can definitely tell it's one of their older styles, I guess, if that's even a thing. But the price doesn't really make sense because the costs haven't been driven up that much.
No, I mean, the cost of oil directly increases the price of plastic.
Sure.
We all know this. But at the same time, like, they, to meet their goal to get this thing made, they had to sell 6,000 units. And so even if their engineering and mold costs were 100,000 plus, I mean, amortizing all that stuff, everything that goes into that, they can't be in those things more than $30 to $50 per. And that $350 price is just crazy. And I mean, obviously they're going to have to do what they have to do. They're a big company. It's Hasbro, and it's probably going to be good. Like, they've put out some pretty good action figures, but it's just, you know, like, when you look at that and then you look at a Hot Toys 1/6 scale collectible and the difference in detail, articulation, even material, like when you have like a die cast Iron Man, that's $350, that makes sense to me. Like there's a lot more meat there. There's a lot more, like the paint apps are better. Like everything about it is better than anything that Hasbro has produced. I mean, not to, it's a different category, like completely, right?
Yeah. I mean, no, nobody associates figures
versus like highly collectible.
When we think about Hasbro and their collect, you think about like their, at least I do, is their top tier stuff was Marvel Legends.
Right.
Like that was, yeah, that was their highest quality stuff that you were going to get. I'm sure there's a lot of people who know of other things that are of much, yeah, higher quality, but I mean, that's where I thought of. But then jumping from $25 to $350 for, yeah, a action figure that if you collected enough Marvel Legends, you could actually put together, yeah, with the parts you got in the package.
I still have one out in our storage shed, the, yeah, the Build-A-Figure Sentinel. I think that thing was almost the same height. Maybe it was a little less. Maybe it was only like 12 inches. I don't know the exact height of that, but it was pretty impressive and the details, yeah, were good. And I mean, I think it cost, yeah, you had to buy 10 and at the time they were only $14.
Well, and you also got, you know, 10 cool action figures.
Right, right. So you're getting 10 cool things, yeah, and then you get a basically a free thing. It's the, yeah, it's the economy that was just awesome. But it's just, it's strange to see the prices go up and statue prices have gone up just an insane amount. Like looking at some of, you know, look at Prime One stuff. It's beautiful work, but $1,200, $1,300, $1,500 for a quarter scale or one third scale statue is, that's a lot of money.
Well, I bought the Batman, the Frank Miller Batman, the first one that they released, the gray one. Right. I think they've done a, yeah, blue one since. I might be wrong about that. And I paid $900 for it and it's a one third. It's beautiful. I love it. But at the time I thought that was outrageous, but it was awesome. And I had to have a Frank Miller Batman, but it keeps going up.
Yeah.
But the cost of production is not going up. And I get it that when your product becomes more in demand, you start to kind of take advantage of that, and that's pretty normal for products in general. But it's like once it starts, you start reaching like that 50% increase in price, mm-hmm, or then you have a Frank Miller Batman, but then you start making kind of more obscure statues that,
right,
regardless of the size and or scale of it, now $1,000 is like your bottom dollar.
Yeah. Your bottom price.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the thing that doesn't correlate to me is the amount or edition size for these things and then their price.
Yeah.
So like with us, like we've made some Frazetta stuff, right? And it wasn't cheap. Like we did one quarter scale Frazetta statues, a couple of them, and they were in the $600 to $700 range.
Yeah.
But we only made 150 of them and 100 of them. Like,
and
that makes sense because our production costs at that low of a number do go up exponentially. You know, at the end of the day, you don't really make any money on those. You're doing it for, you know, the prestige of doing, of making a Frank Frazetta piece.
And the factories don't keep any of these things a secret. They tell you, I mean, they'll tell you up front, like, well, if you do this many, then we'll give you this price or this many, right, or this price. And it's not like we're just talking like the one great factory that you use is not like, it's not like that's the only factory you've ever talked to or tried to do business, right, with or looked into. Yeah. It's you talk to everybody that you possibly can, and they're not hiding anything from you because they want you to go with them and they, right, want to make as much product and money as possible. So it's not just speculation. It's actual, yeah, experience, like dealing with these things and then going, how are these prices so exorbitant? But then it's also not just from like being in the industry kind of, it's as a collector, you're like, I love collecting these things, but now what would cost me a couple grand a year could, yeah, now be $1,000 a month to collect a line of figures.
And we haven't, like, I think the other thing to note too is that we're kind of at a quality peak. I mean, statue making isn't really going to get any better than it is now. This is probably the best it's been. Back in the early Bowen yeah, days, like, you know, Bowen's prototypes were gorgeous and the production runs were really good, but you know, the quality has significantly changed from then to now. And now I think that you can pull off some amazing thing. I mean, yeah. I'm looking at the Sideshow cable right now, and that's an amazing piece. There's so much detail in that thing and so much going on that it's impressive, but it's just, it's crazy to me, because if you make 5,000 of those or 10,000 of those, or, you know, I don't know how many they made, but just an example, the quality is not going to change. A lot of people think that the more you make, the less the quality. It's just the longer it's going to take to make it. And the quality doesn't change.
Let's not pretend that the people that worked stateside, because we know that those people working in China, which is really the only place that it's even possible to manufacture any of this stuff. The people working stateside for the companies, the sculptors, engineers, let's not pretend they're all getting paid $1 million to to design or work on each statue. So
they're not.
Yeah, they're not. So that doesn't justify the price either. No. But I mean, demand, if you're selling it, I understand where people are gonna be like, demand justifies the price. People are buying it, then right. The price is justified. But
to some degree, I mean, and then there has to be some pushback at some point, but it's just crazy to see the cost trends. And that goes across all the board, right? Like if you look at, I used to be a huge Marvel Legends collector. I still have boxes in there that are unopened of full sets of Marvel Legends.
Yeah.
But when I first started buying them, I think they were less than $15 a piece. And now like for lesser, and that was when I believe it was Toy Biz that was doing it at first. It wasn't Hasbro.
Well, and they
were really high. Like, if you remember the first, like,
that's what I was
five series,
say.
Right? They were really high quality.
I think that from what I remember, and I hope that I'm right, is...
Well, we can look it up.
I think that the more recent Marvel Legends I've looked at have been... Wait, I don't remember Marvel Legends looking this bad. And yeah, also being $30 or $25.
Like the sculpts are still pretty good. And the articulation is decent. I think the problem is now they feel cheaper. I think they've changed the plastic or whatever it was. I don't really know what's changed, but they don't feel the same.
Yeah, I don't know if there's the same amount of detail. Not in the sculpt, but I don't know if... I think the sculpts, probably, like you said, are probably great. I don't know if the... I don't know if it's maybe it's the color or the detail. Pre-packaging or anything like that. Just, I don't know what it is, like you're saying.
Yeah. Changed about them.
It's like when you looked at old HeroClix and you would look up close at, I remember specifically a Batman that you had. I think it was the Kryptonite gloves Batman.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah.
him and Superman had the googliest wonky eyes I've ever seen.
Yeah, they did. They were pointing two different directions.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But I mean, like, just looking right here at these old Toy Biz ones, like even the packaging was different. They kind of came with a little comic book in the back. They had all this stuff. And then the new ones are, it's so streamlined and cut down, but they're more expensive. They're $20 to $25 a piece, which is, I mean, if you buy them in store, obviously you buy them online, that's different. But
well, and I think that's once again going back to something that I don't know if we'll get a chance to talk about it today, but is going back to that trying to capitalize on your aftermarket success or your perceived success from a previous line, but what you're changing it, and it's you're not delivering the same product that people were willing to pay top dollar for, but you're still charging top dollar, but you're just trying to say, well, they're Marvel Legends, so people pay, hey, on the aftermarket, people paid $150 for this thing,
right?
So we can charge at least $30 for it. And you're like, well, there was a reason people paid on the aftermarket, because it was hard to find. It was really cool, and everything about it was done really well. But yeah, now these ones, the new ones, they look like something I would get for any 6 or 7 year old. Where the Marvel Legends before, I'm like, I'm not. That's not for a kid. That's for a grown up.
Yeah,
buying that for me.
They were really high quality. Yeah. Like the Colossus from I think it was from the first series was incredible. Like the detail was really good. The articulation was great. He was physically larger than all the rest. Like it was clearly a different mold for the body, and everything was really good.
And so was Deadpool. Deadpool was Deadpool awesome. Was when I see articulated. The when I see the Deadpool, I'm like, is this even like a Marvel Legends? Because this right. seems like it's way
no, too No, I good. Have I have the original one, the red one, in the packaging still. And then I have a newer version of a red one they released, you know, maybe 5-6 years ago or something. And they're completely, it's just night and day. Like the yeah. quality difference is crazy. So I feel like the cost trending upwards, none of this correlates. And I can't come up with a reason for this other than more people are buying. And so with more people buying, they just start ticking yeah. the price up over time.
And you know, they sit there and just go, how can we make the absolute most money on this? Yeah. And that's fine. We don't owe anything to collect. And they don't really, I mean, realistically, I understand you don't owe anything to it, but as a collector, you do like some yeah. kind of like, feedback like, hey, you guys' opinion matters to us. Yeah. Not just you're buying it, then buy it. If you don't want it, don't. But I think it's also harder to look at something and like, or really making any kind of opinion other than they just want to make more money when you're looking at somebody like when Hasbro picks up something. I mean, yeah. I'm pretty sure they're a publicly traded company. So at that point, it's what do our shareholders want? Bigger profits. Yeah. All right, do whatever we can.
And the thing is, like, it's just to be clear, like, we're not disparaging Hasbro. It makes sense. What they're doing makes yeah. sense. Just as a collector, it at some point, it does just kind of suck to have to pay more for the things you love that are not as good as they were before.
Yeah. And people should be talking about it. And yeah. then maybe there are some people listening that don't really have any idea of how any of this works. And they do yeah. assume that maybe it costs $10 million to make these or something along those lines, which, if that's your assumption, it's fine, but at least you get to expose people to kind of how yeah. things are. You get the discussion going and make them, also, everybody should question what they spend their money on and why. Is it worth it? I mean, obviously, that's entirely subjective. But there is a way that people can influence that. And we've seen it yeah. before where when something's too expensive and not the quality you expect, unfortunately, collectibles, you can't just take back. You can't just return and be like, oh, this thing kind of sucked. Wasn't yeah. as cool as I thought it would be for the most part. Like, you can take something to Best Buy, but you can influence companies when you stop buying or you start at least giving them feedback like, hey, right. this is out of control.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's something to note too, is at our company's not any different. Like, we have to make money yeah. to survive. Right. So but we try to price fairly. And I think we price in line with what's out there right now. But it's definitely through the course of this series of podcasts, we're going to do some deep dives into, you know, what it takes to make a collectible, how that actually looks, the costs that go into it, and really give people an inside look into actual costs so they can make better decisions in the future on, well, do I want to spend $1,100 on a statue yeah. that I know likely only has $220 worth of cost into it?
Yeah.
You know, something like that. Because it, obviously, if it's something you love, buy it. Like, no one's judging you. It's your money. Do what you want. But being more informed as to what you're buying, what it takes for that thing to be made, you know, and that knowledge just doesn't really exist. It almost feels like it's a secret, so to speak, but it's not. It's yeah. it's really easy to find out. And I think we're going to talk about that in depth in another episode for sure. And then, you know, another thing I think pushing up cost trends that we haven't touched on is customs, like
yeah
not border patrol customs, but
yeah
but custom statues and custom figures, like those becoming more and more of a I don't want to say mainstream, but that's kind of what it is when there's, you know, thousands of Facebook
it's
groups.
It's kind of a weird
yeah
I don't it's a strange kind of like a just a strange dichotomy of it's exclusive and rare and underground, yeah. but at the same time, it's not that at all because everybody's doing it now.
Yeah.
And so it's now becoming mass produced.
Yeah.
And
it started, I mean, the roots of the custom stuff started, you know, back in what, the 80s with garage kits.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people I know who started their businesses because of doing customs. I mean, I'm part of that. You know, like doing customs, I think is super cool. But the problem is now there's been so many of them and they're really expensive. You know, I think the average price for a custom right now is right around $1,000 bucks.
Like, well, and originally that was happening because it made sense, like we were talking about before, where if you were going to have a factory do it, do your production, you weren't doing it in-house, you had to, and you had to pay a lot to have 25 units made.
Right. And that makes sense. But now I think what's happening is other companies, official companies who have licenses who are making these things are looking at the customs world and going, well, if they can get $1,200 for a Wolverine or for a Spider-Man, why can't we?
Exactly.
What's the difference? And we will do it better because in all actuality, let's be real here. Like, 75% of customs are not that great.
No.
They're because they're not art directed. They're not usually they don't use professional sculptors. Once in a while they do, but a lot of times it's amateur sculptors. It's amateur art directors that don't know what they're doing. They just want to see something cool, and that's subjective.
It's like independent musicians.
Yeah,
90% of it sucks.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean,
I'd probably say 96%
of it sucks. And we know that because you could go on SoundCloud and be like, I don't want to listen to almost 100% of the music on here. But there are a few people on there very talented and really good and do a good job. But
and that stems from feedback or lack thereof. Right. So when you're making something like, for example, at our company, when we make something, it goes through a committee, essentially. Like, we have our art directors, we have our sculptors. But before the product gets fully greenlit, like, we have to take it through the whole team. Everybody has to have their eyes on it, look at it, and call out areas that aren't very good or need changing or could be better. And when you're doing like a custom, it's just a dude that goes, hey, I'm going to pay someone to make this. Mm-hmm. They make it and there's no feedback.
Yeah. And for the most part, hey, this is what you're getting. It's going to be available for pre-order starting tomorrow. Just DM me and $400 deposit.
Yeah. And then it doesn't look very good in the end. And then, you know.
And let's not also forget about, we're talking about the limited production on them, but we know for a fact that that hasn't actually been the case where they've gone in one private group. I'm only making 50. They go to another private group. I'm making 50. Another private group. I'm making 50. So they're telling everybody they're making 50. They're making 150. And who knows, basically whoever wants it, because their markup is huge.
You go on eBay and you see that, oh, now the factory they use is selling them as well. Yeah. I mean, it's not something that we necessarily support. I think that, you know, IP infringement's a big deal, but at the same time, there is plenty of opportunity for these larger companies to make characters that they're not making. Mm-hmm. And that's where the customs world comes in and goes, well, we're going
to
do that.
They're trying to fill a gap.
And it's a gap that needs to be filled. And I think there needs to be better ways to do it in the future. Like, we've talked about this before with, you know, micro licensing, which that can be a whole other episode.
Yeah.
But I think that right now, just the customs being so prevalent and so many of them, they are driving the price of your everyday Batmans, Wolverine, Spider-Mans, everything. Because people see that, that work at those companies go, you know, $1,100, let's do it.
And some companies have very old grips on some of these licenses that create a non-competitive environment.
Yes.
They make it nearly impossible because they've been essentially grandfathered in, and it just leaves no room for competition.
Well,
in some of these.
It's sometimes also, it's not just that, it's that the companies holding the IP start to realize that it's really important and people really want the product. So then they push their price beyond what a small, like, for example, for us, you know, we talked to Marvel early on and the price was insane. Like, we just could not afford it. And then the comment from the person at Marvel even was, you know, even if you could afford it, you can't have it because you're in the States and other people already have this license.
I understand, for transparency, we're referring to
Sideshow, right? They're not a villain, but they have the license and
to a degree that makes sense.
Hold it, you know.
But when you want to fill a gap that's not being filled, like we talked about with that customs are trying to do, there's a lot of things out there people want, whereas a license holder doesn't want to produce it, but they don't want to let anybody else produce it either.
And that, you know, that not to villainize the license holders either. I think the main issue there is that once you get to like that corporation level, it's not one person making the call.
If you
submit, for example, let's say Marvel gave us a license and then we go to submit what we want to make. It doesn't go to one person. It goes to a whole bunch of people and they all have to approve. And sometimes it goes to the original comic book artist who drew it and all these other people before it comes back for approval. And that's something where they go, well, if we have 35 companies doing this, we're going to be drowned in work. And so they go, well, we only want 5 companies doing this, or we want 5 American companies and we'll let our foreign offices, you know, deal with the foreign licenses.
Yeah.
Which is why like XM has a license for Marvel because they're in Singapore.
Yeah.
It makes sense. You know, but having like, if we wanted a quarter scale Marvel license here in the States, we just can't have
it's
it. Unless you, I guess potentially investor. We did some crazy stylized, like completely non-competitive version, right?
Unrecognizable. Right.
Then maybe we would have a chance.
But. Which then would be tough anyway, because they also have to make sure that their product is recognizable if they're going to have their name on it. And I think one thing that gets lost for some of the companies that are growing, like we're talking about Sideshow, is, which we still have more than these bigger companies, is the nostalgia and sentimentality just disappears. It's no longer I started this in my garage. I was a collector. I was really passionate. And now it's just like, I got people to answer to and I got money to make.
Yep.
And I don't,
they employ a lot of people, you know? And I mean, again, not that we're picking on Sideshow. They're a great
they're just company. They're just the biggest. That's really, them, you know, they're just the biggest. They've never done anything wrong to us.
No.
They've never, they don't, they're,
they sell our product.
There's there's nothing nefarious, but we're using them as an example because they have a million licenses and they make everything. So it's just, it's not like there's a huge competitor out there, at least stateside, that really exists that we can really compare them to.
No. And it's really interesting though, that like once we started getting into licensing, you know, we have quite a few licenses ourselves. They're smaller than Marvel and DC, but in my mind, they're just as important. You know, I'm excited to keep moving forward with our Vault Master license. There's so much stuff there and that company is doing amazing things. But it is a little disparaging when you are disappointing, I guess, when we put out a product like our Atis statue from Heathen and it immediately just drops below countless Spider-Mans and Wolverines and stuff.
And that's,
it's such a cool statue. And it like, I really wish that more people could get eyes on that. Like there was a way to market statues better.
And that's
unfortunately,
the thing,
like there just isn't.
It's, you know? That's a question that needs to be answered, is how do we promote so many of these good products?
Yeah. I mean, right now we're stuck with just Instagram and Facebook and like, that's it. And
which is great, but Instagram and Facebook, there's no place that's also easier to get lost in other things like celebrities.
Yeah.
And
most people just scroll right past ads
athletes,
anyways,
music, you know? Kardashians, that's the kind of stuff you just get kind of obfuscated by.
Yeah, it's a fun world. So I hoped that everybody liked what we had to say. I know we kind of went on about some stuff a little longer than we should have. We'll get down a good pattern over the next couple episodes. This is our first one. So we had a lot of fun. This is going to be out on Monday. You'll probably hear this on Monday, so that doesn't matter to you, but what it's going to be every Monday.
January 13th?
Yeah, they'll be hearing this on the 13th. Oh. Yeah. And then
or January, July 13th.
January. Yes, we're going to go in the past and deliver a podcast. And then from here on, it'll just be every Monday. And we'll talk about different things. And then on our Instagram at level52_studios, you can give us suggestions on what you'd want to hear. We're also going to have a website, which we'll put up. You'll see it in all of the places you find your podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all that stuff. All the links will be there. And we'd love to hear what you guys think. Any feedback, anything you want to hear, questions, comments, we'll start taking all those as well. So thanks a lot. Thanks for listening. I'm Chris.
I'm Steven.
Have a good day.